From KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Those mid swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Here we go.
Now, Matt Pauley on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Here we go. Let's go.
We do welcome you in. It's time for another Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley. Have you till 8 o'clock this evening. We've got a busy program coming up in about 10 minutes or so. We are going to welcome in studio Elizabeth Meineke from Cardinals Magazine, the most recent edition of Cardinals Magazine. Fantastic as always, but we'll talk with her about some of what's inside of it, including the feature story, which is a combined conversation with Mason Wynn and Ozzie Smith. So that's going to be coming up in just a little while. We'll talk some college football coming up next hour as well. As always, if you want to chime in on anything that we're talking about, you can do so by calling, texting, or tweeting, or leaving a voice message via the Odyssey app. If you call or text, the phone number is 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. You can tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air, M-A-T-T-P-A-U-L-E-Y on air, or you can, like I said, leave the voice message on the Odyssey app. If you're listening to us, just click the little microphone button, leave a message, and those come straight into the studio, and we monitor those as we do go along. So I'm a little bummed out. World Series yesterday. At this point, I think the Dodgers are going to win. Clearly, they're up 3-0. Like, that's not the hot take that that anybody thinks it might be. I'm just bummed that this thing looks like it's going to be done in maybe a sweep, or if it's a five-game series, they like to call that the gentleman sweep. Yeah, like, this on paper, coming into this series, I thought this had the opportunity to be a really, really competitive series. And I thought the Yankees would win, but it was one of those things where I was like 51-49. That was my percentage of where I thought it might come in at. And so, the Dodgers potentially winning the series doesn't shock me. But I'm bummed. I'm bummed that this looks likely. And look, maybe the Yankees go on a little bit of a run here, and they win tonight, and they win tomorrow. And at the very least, they send it back to L.A. for a game number six. Have a hard time believing the Yankees are going to win four straight against the Dodgers. Not that it is impossible, but it is incredibly unlikely that that would end up happening. I thought that this would be a much better series. And game one was great. The Freddie Freeman home run, and the Yankees were so close to winning that game. They had the lead going to the bottom of the 10th. Even the second game, Yankees had an opportunity late and were unable to do anything there. But yesterday, not that competitive of a game. And now you go into tonight, as it is game number four, and the Yankees are playing for their playoff lives as they attempt to try to just keep the baseball season going. Now, the one thing the Yankees do have going for them tonight is the fact that it's going to be a bullpen game for the Dodgers. The Dodgers' opener is going to be Ben Kasperius. We'll see who they end up using after that. So if the Yankees can win this game, if they can force the Dodgers to use a lot of pitchers in this bullpen game, maybe that turns into something for game number five and gives the Yankees an opportunity. But I'm just bummed. I don't want to see. I think this year's postseason has been amazing. And I'm just bummed on behalf of the good of baseball. I'm just bummed that this has turned into not so great of a series. We'll keep you updated on the Blues as we go along throughout the course of the evening as well. They are in Ottawa. They are matched up against the Senators. That game is going to be getting underway just about. If it's not quite started yet, it'll be getting underway any moment. So. The Blues, they do make a little bit of news earlier today as they sign Alexei Toropchenko to a one-year contract extension, $1.7 million. He would have been a restricted free agent at the end of the year, so if nothing else, this is one less thing that Doug Armstrong has to worry about coming into the offseason. He's just got the deal done. He becomes the latest restricted free agent or pending restricted free agent that the Blues have been able to get signed in, as Jake Nabors signed a two-year extension earlier this month worth just under $4 million. We'll see if they might do. There's some other ones that could possibly happen at some point in time. Probably goaltender Joel Hofer would be the one who would be most likely to get signed to some sort of deal at some point this season. He's going to be the guy who's probably going to cost more money. But I think if you're the Blues, after what they did this year with the restricted free agents, you probably just want to make sure that the RFAs that you have that you want to keep under contract, that you got these guys locked in, because it just felt like when the Blues made the decision to go after Dylan Holloway and go after Philip Broberg, that the rest of the NHL kind of took note of that. And not that they broke any rules, they didn't. Some people said that there's, you know, kind of some unwritten rules when it comes to that. The rules are the rules. So they did what they're allowed to do. I would just say, if you're the Blues and you had as much success as you did this year, signing a couple restricted free agents away from other teams or another team, you go ahead and make sure that the restricted free agents that you have, that they are indeed under contract, and you don't have to worry about them potentially being poached. So again, we'll keep you updated on the Blues as we go along this evening. But when we return, we're going to talk with Elizabeth Meineke from Cardinals Magazine. The latest issue has a great cover story featuring a conversation with Mason Wynn and Ozzie Smith, plus a lot of other great stuff in there. We're going to talk with her in just a moment or so. This is a Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly, back with you, taking you till 8 o'clock this evening. I'll tell you what, this is a treat for the next half hour or so. We are very happy to welcome on in studio. She is the senior editor for Cardinals Magazine. She is Elizabeth Meineke in studio. Like I said, Elizabeth, great to see you. How are you?
Thank you. It's a treat to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, wanted to have you on to talk a little bit about the most recent issue of Cardinals. It's called Game Day Magazine, but it's you guys produce at the end of the season, into the offseason. Season into spring training. The magazine is always being worked on, and the most recent issue, you've got the cover story, which is a conversation with a great shortstop of the current and a great shortstop of the past, and Mason Wynn and Ozzie Smith. And I don't want to give too much away, but I got to tell you, as I was reading this, the thing that I enjoyed the most about it was I thought you did a really good job of putting answers together where they kind of played off each other, and you could hear you're reading it, but you could hear the mutual respect for each other. I thought it was really cool.
Thank you. And that really was the reason why we wanted to get them together, right? The genesis of the story actually just came from an internal conversation I was having with someone in the organization, and they were just talking about how excited Ozzie was about Mason. Mm-hmm. And so, it's neat because I think this is a relationship that, you know, obviously as Cardinals fans, we want to see blossom. And so it was fun to realize that that was actually truly happening, you know, behind the scenes. This wasn't an outside narrative imposed on something, that, you know, there really is this mutual respect there. And we kind of found that out in more than one way, because it took a couple of times to actually get this interview scheduled. I mentioned before we came on air that we had this scheduled a couple times and it kept on getting rained out. Hmm.
So there were a lot of rainouts this year.
A lot of rainouts, yeah. So taking everyone a little bit behind the scenes, you know, I'd get home that night and I'd be like, okay, have everything set, because there were so many different departments that chipped in to help make this happen. You know, everyone from, you know, just we did the interview in one of the suites, so we were involved with that department. I mean, Cardinals Insider was there. We had photography. So you think you have all of your ducks in a row, and then the rain comes and doubleheader gets scheduled for the next day. So I think, again, though, it was just a testament. Every time we went back to Ozzie Mason and said, hey, something happened with the weather, like, are you willing to, you know, put this on your schedule again? They were 100% for it. And so it was neat to see their enthusiasm for each other. And that, I mean, Ozzie is a Hall of Famer. He has a busy schedule. Obviously, Mason had a great season, was, you know, busy playing his heart out on the mm-hmm. field. So for them to take the time out to do this and to be able to, each time we came back and said, hey, you know, could we make it work a different date because of the rain? To have them agree to do that, I think, just speaks to their mutual respect.
I had a caller on this show yesterday call up and say, when he was growing up, Cardinals fans had Ozzie Smith, who everybody could love and adore. And the caller's point was, he didn't know if there was that player currently for the Cardinals who kids could really look up to and revere. And my immediate answer was, it's Mason Wynn. Like, what he did this past year, it was remarkable how I thought the youngest generation of Cardinals fans kind of glommed on to win as being their favorite Cardinal. Did you see that?
I think that's a great observation. And, you know, I think that, you know, I would just defer to Ozzy on this. Ozzy said when, you know, during the interview that, you know, people come up to him every day and say how excited they are to come to the ballpark to watch Mason play. Mm-hmm. So you figure if Ozzie Smith is getting that feedback from people, you know, we're kind of like, can you imagine, you know, being a fan and going up to Ozzie Smith and talking about another shortstop in St. Louis? So I think it's a credit and a testament to, you know, Ozzie's character and his excitement to have Mason here. And then also, quite frankly, he volunteered that information, you know, that when he mentioned that, it was an answer to a different question. So he felt important that it was important enough to bring up and just talk about the entertainment value that he feels that Mason brings to the ballpark and that he's already getting that feedback. And, you know, the other thing that I've really been impressed about with Mason is he's so young, right? I mean, we drafted him out of high school. He's 22, and yet he gets it. You know, he gets that there is that obligation to the fan base who have given so much to this brand and have helped make this brand what it is. And, you know, he's said multiple times in the piece, you know, I'm not that far removed from being like a 14-year-old kid myself. And like, I would have thought it was so cool if a baseball player had stopped to give me an autograph. So he really wants to make sure that he is available for fans in that way and that he is creating those connections. He appreciates that.
Yeah, I thought it was cool when you talked to him about that because nobody's ever had a bad interaction with Ozzie Smith. And Ozzie has bad days, like everybody has bad days. But if you go meet Ozzie, he's not going to let that bad day, you know, come out. And everybody's got a, you know, he's in this community. It feels like there's nobody that's out there that doesn't have some interaction with Ozzie Smith's story. It's always positive. And the fact that Mason is largely, you know, the same way, where it means so much to him to talk to kids and things. They got stuff to do. Baseball players are busy, and sometimes it's 100 degrees outside, and you've just been taking ground balls, and all you want to do is get inside and cool down for 35 minutes before first pitch. But every day, Wynn's out there talking to kids, signing autographs. It's really cool.
Well, you know, Ozzy phrased it this way. He said that great players know that, you know, you need to make people feel a part of something. Mm-hmm. And he mentioned some of the other Cardinals legends, like Red Shaney and Sam Usual. He's like, you almost don't even have to be told this, right? Like, they understood that. You know, they were a part of the community and they wanted to give back to the community, that they understood that relationship. And again, I am impressed, especially because Mason is so young, you know, that he is already starting to see that and understand that. And you know, you're right. You talk about a championship mindset, right? There's a championship mindset when it comes to your skill set on the field. But I think there's something to be said for that sort of championship mindset off the field, which is how do you treat people? How do you view a fan base? And Ozzie, again, has set just such a gold standard. And I'm hopeful that Mason is following in those footsteps. Again, he's still young and he's still, you know, just getting accustomed mm-hmm. to being a big leaguer. But I really feel that his eyes are opened to that aspect of the game and that he really wants to make sure that's part of his persona in St. Louis. You know, he even brought up that Kobe Bryant quote from a while back, yeah. You know, where I think it was Kobe's wife had asked him, like, can't you just take a game off? You know, I mean, whatever he was playing through at the time, just injury wise. And Kobe's like, there could be someone who this is the only time that they ever come to a basketball game and get to see me play. And I want to be there for them. And so the fact that Wynn even, you know, remembered that quote and was trying to apply it to his mentality, I think is really great.
As a parent, like, I look around and I say, who can my daughters look up to? Who can I feel comfortable with that? And one of the stories that is talked about in this from Mason Wynn is when he was younger, he was playing football, and there's one kid that never got the football thrown to him. And it was borderline kind of a bullying type situation, it felt like, based off what I read. And Mason's parents said, get this other kid involved, throw him the football. And the impact that had on that kid and also that kid's parents and everything, like, those are the kind of stories that you want to read about somebody that you want, like, your kid to be able to look up to.
Yes, and I had actually read that story a while ago. Rob Raines, who's done some great reporting, obviously, for many years in the St. Louis area, had done a piece, a profile on Mason several years back. And I had read that story there, and so I wanted to bring that up in this interview just because, again, looking at sort of the standard that Ozzie set when he played here and then, you know, obviously Mason playing that same position, you know, it was interesting to see some similarities, not just in the position that they played and in their defensive prowess, but also, again, in how that they viewed their responsibilities to being a big leaguer off the field. And so that was a story that we wanted to bring up in the interview, just because I remember being so touched when I read that piece that Rob did. And it was an example of, you know, I think it was just there were kids throwing the football around before, you know, either school or a game. And there was one kid who no one was throwing the football to, I think. And so Mason's mom went to him and said, make sure tomorrow I want to see you throw the football to him. And, you know, she said the next day Mason did, and the kids, you know, parents were, you know, the kid's parent was crying. They were so touched. You know, it was funny because as I was starting to, you know, read or relay the story in the interview, Mason was like, oh, I think I know what story you're going for. So it was clearly, you know, I think it was important to his mom that if she saw those leadership skill sets in her son, even from a young age, that he was using them for the good. So
we're talking with Elizabeth Meineke, senior editor for Cardinals Magazine. When you look at the way the shortstop position has changed in baseball, I think over the last 20 years, you go back 20 years and, you know, Troy Tulowitzki emerged, big dude, home run hitter. And now guys like Ellie De La Cruz and O'Neill Cruz, although he's been moved off the shortstop position, there's more bigger power hitting kind of guys that are playing shortstop. That's not Mason Winn. Winn obviously can hit a home run when he needs to. He's got a guy who can hit for average as well, but he's the smaller frame, super athletic, super focused on defense. And in this conversation, he kind of referred to himself as more of the old school style of shortstop. And with all due respect to those other players who are all great, if you want to see a show, that's the kind of shortstop you want to see.
Yes, and it was kind of fun to see Ozzie and Mason sort of bond, you know, as they were talking about what, you know, the prototypical shortstop versus, you know, what you described as happening in the game today. And I do, you know, I think that something that Ozzie said was so key to, again, viewing how they play the position, which is that, you know, something that that can separate shortstops is the ability to take away momentum on defense. You know, a lot of times in baseball, we think about offense as being the momentum shifter. But, you know, Ozzie said, I've got to give credit to Whitey Herzog. He really taught me otherwise, that you can, you know, steal momentum through a great defensive play, too. And so that for both of them is something that can really characterize their style of play. And to your point, I mean, you want to see that, mm-hmm. right? You want to see that. That's part of the entertainment value that, you know, Ozzie was talking about in the interview that he feels that Mason brings. Obviously, it was something that Ozzie brought, you know, as well when he was playing. So it is neat to, it's still cool to be old school sometimes.
Yeah.
So, and this is definitely one of those instances.
The part of the conversation, and it comes out really, really well, obviously, and people should read it. The part of the conversation that I would have loved to have been in the room just to experience them watching was when you asked the question about the toughest play, because Winn talked about going up the middle. Ozzie talked about, you know, going to his right and go deep in the hole. And then Winn talked about how much fun, you know, turning double plays and being the second guy on the double play. Like, just listening to those guys kind of talk shop in that way. You did great writing it, but I got to think just being there and listening to that conversation had to be so cool.
It was fun. They really got into that question. And of course, you know, as a journalist, right, like you agonize over which questions you're going to ask beforehand. You know, you have a certain time frame and you're like, okay, do I cut this question out? Do I keep this question on? And that happened to be a question that my dad suggested I ask. So I'm like, of course, dad is always right. You know, I was like, I got out of the interview and I'm like, the question that my dad thought, hey, you should really ask that. They just got so into that. And it was fun because it initially started off as a question about, yeah, which defensive play was the most difficult for you to make? And they started answering that, and then they flipped around. Ozzie just on his own was like, and by the way, this was my favorite play to make, and then Mason played off of that. So it was neat. We really wanted, again, to have a baseball conversation with them, right? And that was, I think, the joy of being able to get them in the same room and having them sit down together as opposed to just interviewing them separately about each other, was to be able to see them play off of each other. And again, hopefully that comes across in the piece.
Have you talked to your dad about the answer?
I did. I had to fess up that he was right. I should have just learned. I'm 39 years old at this point. I should just know dad's always right. But yeah, I ate some humble pie.
Okay.
I was like,
well,
Dad, you had a good question.
Did your dad get a kick out of the answer?
I think he did appreciate. I think he appreciated that I had asked it. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, again, dad's always right.
There you go. We're talking with Elizabeth Meineke from Cardinals Magazine. We'll take a break and continue the conversation in just a moment. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
We are back at it here on a Tuesday night as we roll on till 8 o'clock this evening. In the second hour, we'll talk some hockey. We'll talk some college football as well. But this hour, we're very happy to be joined by senior editor for Cardinals Magazine, Elizabeth Meineke, who had the cover story in the most recent issue of Cardinals Game Day Magazine. That is issue number 4. I'll ask you this again in the end, but I want to make sure I don't forget. Folks, a lot of times, get their Cardinal magazine during the season because they're at games and they just head up to the stand. When it's the off season, how do people get a copy of Cardinals Game Day magazine?
Well, thank you for asking. You can go to our website, which is cardinals.com/publications, or you can go to cardinals.com/magazine. We also produce the team yearbook. So if you go to cardinals.com/publications, you'll be able to see the full range of things that we offer. But you can sign up for a subscription online, or you can buy a single issue.
It's the yearbook came out a few months ago. We had Stan McNeil in the studio to talk about that. I mean, just I love what you guys do, and you're able to get in depth on some things that, with all due respect to kind of the world of journalism right now, where everybody wants to break news, and there's just, there doesn't seem to be that space for the in-depth feature pieces where you're able to take some time. And the way you guys work, you're able to really take a step back and take time on stories and think through stuff and go back to people a second or a third time. It's something that's really, really cool, and hopefully people are aware that it's going on.
Thank you. We do really pride ourselves not only on the long form journalism, but even just on the photography as well. I know the Ozzie Mason piece that we were talking about during the last segment, you know, my boss was able to go through the archives and he put together, it was a side by side of, you know, a photo of Ozzie just kind of amazing laying out on this one defensive play and then Mason. So we really try to make sure that the entire presentation is something that fans can appreciate and adds value.
Some of the other items that are in this most recent copy of a Game Day magazine, there's a conversation and a feature on Cardinals prospect Quinn Matthews, who Cardinals fans should be really excited about. He's likely to be with the team at some point this upcoming season. And what really struck me when reading it is how he wants to push and push and push and push, and sometimes it's other people kind of pulling him back. He, when you know, after his college season, when the Cardinals basically shut him down for the rest of the year, he wanted to get some time that year. This past season, they started him at Low A Palm Beach, and he was hoping for a higher assignment. Like, this is just a dude who's like going after it 24/7.
His personality really kind of jumped off the page to me. So our senior writer, Mark Emmert, went down to Springfield right before Quinn got promoted to AAA, just to talk to him and get some information for this piece. And so, you know, I'm editing it after Mark submits it, and I'm like, exactly what you said. Cardinals fans are going to love this guy's personality. I mean, you know, his whole philosophy is he hasn't accomplished a single thing until he helps the big league team win. And probably not just win, but win a World Series. Mm-hmm. So I love his drive. To your point, yes, this was a guy who, you know, made headlines when I think he had that, was it 156 pitch game,
yeah,
in college. And then, of course, we draft him and he insists that he wants to keep pitching, you know, the season, and we're like, no, mate, you know, just, you're fine. There's, you know, not much time left in the minor league season. You can take a break, you can rest. So I think that drive is something that Cardinals fans will really appreciate. And Mark did a great job going into the piece too, you know, kind of talking about how, because you know, I think Quinn's parents didn't want him to throw a curveball at a young age, so he kind of had to learn to change up early just to give himself something, because the velocity for him didn't come as early as it does for some other prospects. So Mark did a really nice job kind of tracing sort of the evolution of his profile as a pitcher, but also really weaving in his personality.
One and kind of a sidebar on that story, which I thought was intriguing, not just as an anecdote, but going forward, I don't know if it was one of just somebody who helped him on pitching or whether it was his college coach who said this, but somebody basically said he, because he's a Stanford kid, really smart guy, he was so focused on being a student that he was never all in on baseball, because when you're a student at Stanford, obviously they're studying things like that. He really worked hard in the off season going into his first full professional season, put on weight, added velocity, did all that sort of stuff. But it was the first time where he could just focus on baseball, and it really made him better. So for Cardinals fans, A, it's cool that he was a good student. B, it's cool that he worked so hard to get to that point. And C, it's cool that that's only one off season of him doing all this work. What is it going to look like as he continues to focus solely on baseball year after year after year?
Exactly. And, you know, he said, too, he's not afraid to tinker. Like, if something isn't working, he's not afraid to go back to the drawing board and figure out, all right, like, how can I change? How can I improve? He is not not in any way, shape or form come across as a personality who would be complacent. And so, again, I think that also speaks to hopefully a long and successful career in the sport and hopefully at the major league level.
There's a profile on Benji Molina, and I love anybody who comes in contact with Benji just falls in love with Benji. He's salt of the earth, such a good guy, lives his life in service to the community that he's part of. I mean, just a truly special individual. And I thought that came out in this story. They talked to him while he was doing a camp, I think it was in Baldwin. And he obviously is part of the Spanish radio group, and he's Yadi's older brother. I mean, there's so much going on, but Benji's a guy kind of like Ozzy, and he hasn't been here anywhere near as long, but everybody's got a Benji story, and it's always a really positive experience. He's so good at helping people have better days.
He's so approachable, and you kind of forget. He's so approachable, you forget. He's like, oh, he's got gold gloves, and he's got a World Series ring. Yeah, one of my favorite anecdotes from that particular piece, again, Mark Emmert wrote that one. He did a great job, was the camp that Benji was helping with. So the Cardinals, we do kids clinics throughout the summer, and they're in several different locations around St. Louis and Illinois. And so it's a great opportunity. I think there were like 150 kids at this clinic, I think ranging from ages from like 7 to 13. And so they have several guest instructors who are all Cardinals alumni. So the kids have a chance to be taught by Cardinals alumni. They walk them through defensive drills. And afterwards, however, kids usually have an opportunity to get autographs from the alumni who've participated. And, you know, Mark has one of the kids in the story saying, we've got to get in line first to get Benji's autograph because his line's just going to keep getting longer and longer. So if we don't get it now, you know, we're going to be waiting in line for forever, which again is a testament to Benji's personality. And I don't know how he has so many hours in the day to do all the good work that he does. I mean, he helps out with Stray Rescue in St. Louis. He did a toy drive last year. He's hoping to do several more this year. It's a very successful toy drive. Several more this year. I know when we had the issue come in, we're like, hey, Benji, could you know you come down to the ballpark and help us promote it? He came down to the ballpark. He stood there in the team store and signed like 15 copies, autographed them. So that way, just when people came in and purchased single issues, you know, that they would open it up and, oh, wait, there was an autograph from Benji Molina. So the amount of good that he does in a single day is just truly impressive.
I like telling the story about him because this is one of those things that he does that nobody would ever know that he does. I've got a friend who was at the game with her kids and nieces and nephews, and I had taken them into like the broadcast booth just to show them things, and they were sitting kind of in front of the broadcast booth, and in the middle of the game, an usher came down and gave all the kids baseballs, and turns out they were sent down from Benji, and my friend just assumed that I had something to do with this, and I had no, because she sent me a message thanking me for having Benji send down baseballs. Like, I had nothing to do with it. So I talked to him the next day. Every game, he looks for kids who are sitting in front of the booth, and he's got baseballs, and he has ushers take down baseballs to kids. I mean, it's stuff like that. He's always on, and he's always doing really cool things.
He does. I really do think that he takes being an ambassador to the game and really helping grow the game with the younger generation. I think he takes that seriously. But he doesn't take himself seriously, right? So he's so great at creating those interactions and creating those memories, but he makes it fun. He's like, I'll take selfies with kids. You know, it's just how do you relate to kids these days? How do you connect with them? And I think that both his love of the sport then can really shine through in those areas. And anyone who's hung around with Polo and Benji just know that they are so much fun and that they're really passionate about the sport. And I think that translates well to the fan base. And they do take that extra step. They go the extra mile to really connect with those different generations and make sure that they have a special experience, particularly at the ballpark.
I don't speak a lick of Spanish, and I love listening to their calls.
Isn't it fun?
It's so fun.
I don't speak any Spanish either, and I'm like, I need to learn because I just get excited listening to their calls.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. Benji's kind of alluded to it in this, and he said to me before, you know, in St. Louis, he's Yadi's brother. Everywhere else, he's Benji Molina. I mean, he had a heck of a career, and he did enough to not be somebody's brother. He doesn't run away from the Yadi's brother thing, But at the same time, and it's funny, you know, we associate him so much with the Cardinals. He never played a game with the Cardinals, yet here he is, such a big part of the organization. I always kind of feel bad that there's, for people who don't get to know him, they think of him as Yadi's brother, where he's a lot more than just Yadi's big brother.
He really is. And I do appreciate, though, the fact that he embraces being Yadi's older brother. You know, to him, that's a, you know, a mark of honor in this city, and he appreciates that. And part of the reason why he said, you know, Benji does live in St. Louis now full time. And he said part of the reason is, you know, he wanted to be able to give back to St. Louis because they did so much for Yadi. And obviously with Benji, you know, doing the Spanish broadcast, you know, that he was able to be involved that way. But again, just taking that time out to be part of the community and really making sure, you know, that he is involved is just fantastic. And I think that, you know, obviously Benji's resume speaks for itself, but it really is just so impressive. I mean, again, Gold Gloves, World Series ring. He was in uniform for us as a hitting, I believe, an assistant hitting coach at one point. I think it was the year that Yadi won a Silver Slugger. So he was on our coaching staff in one capacity. But you're right, that was really the only time. I mean, he never played for us. And the fact, though, that he has really been able to become such a big, vibrant part of this community, I think is fantastic. And I think just a testament, he's a hard worker. He is such a hard worker, but he's always doing it with a smile on his face. And I think it's really special that St. Louis has been able to just see so many different sides of the Molina family, whether it was Yadier playing on the field and everything that he was able to get back to St. Louis on the field. And then what Benji's able to do, you know, off the field is fantastic.
We've barely touched the surface on everything that's in this magazine. There's a Michael Ciani feature. You guys talk with Tom Mee from Bally Sports about the TV broadcast and kind of the way they go about that. Miles Michaelis has a piece in there. I mean, there's so much. Just really cool that you guys are able to put together this much content in every single issue. One more time before we get you out of here, if you can pick up a single copy, and this is definitely worth it. The Mason Wynn, Ozzie Smith story is so much fun to read, but I would encourage people to go ahead and just get themselves a subscription to Cardinals Game Day Magazine. How do you go about doing that?
You can go to cardinals.com/magazine and sign up there.
Is there a t-shirt deal? Am I throwing you on the spot right now?
Yes, you're right. Okay. You know, there's actually, believe it or not, a t-shirt featuring Ozzie Smith. We have an exclusive t-shirt design that we come out with each year for our two-year subscribers. So if you sign up for a two-year subscription, you have an option to get this free t-shirt, this complimentary t-shirt with that. And it pays a tribute to Ozzie's 1985 home run in the postseason and Jack Buck's call on that. So
awesome.
Pairs perfectly with this Ozzie and Mason cover.
That's great stuff. Cardinals.com/publications is where folks can get for more information. Elizabeth, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being here.
That's Elizabeth Meineke from Cardinals Game Day Magazine. We'll take a break. We'll come back and we'll wrap up hour number one of the program. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Just a couple minutes left in hour number one. Appreciation to Elizabeth Meineke from Cardinals at Game Day Magazine for joining us, talking through everything in the most recent issue. Again, the feature story is a conversation with Mason Wynn and Ozzie Smith. I didn't really even get into everything that I wanted to talk with Elizabeth about, and even that story. I love the is reverence the word? Maybe. I'll go with reverence. I love the reverence that Wynn has for Ozzie. And it was mentioned in the conversation just how excited Wynn was when he got to meet Ozzie a couple years ago. And this might make you feel a little old. Wynn's a super young guy. Ozzie Smith, not so young anymore. It's been a little while since Ozzie's been playing. So Mason, obviously, never saw Ozzie play live. By the time Mason was coming into this world, Ozzie was headed into the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. So just a very cool part of that relationship is the fact that even though Wynn is so young, he has appreciation and admiration for who and what Ozzie Smith is. And that's one of the coolest things about being connected to the Cardinals, especially when you're down at spring training, is just you see these former Cardinals coming through and the connection that the organization has to the past. Now, sometimes cynics out there will say they focus too much on the connection to the past. I would disagree with that, but it is quite the thing to be able to say, hey, Ozzie's going to come in. He's going to be a guest instructor at spring training for a couple weeks. That is something that not a whole lot of organizations have, and it's a very, very good thing that the Cardinals do have. We'll take a break for the 7 o'clock news. Have more in a moment. It's a Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Continuing on right here on KMOX, we do welcome you back in into hour number two of the program. We'll talk some college football coming up in just a few minutes. The Blues are playing right now. It is not going well for them. They are down by a 3-0 score, and they are yet to get out of the first period. There was an early timeout call that I saw, Just not very good. Joel Hofer is in goal. He's allowed 3 goals on 11 shots, where the Blues have 4 shots this entire game. So not great. Blues tweeted out something about an hour ago or so that I thought was interesting. So these games now, the TV home of the Blues now is FanDuel Sports Network Midwest. It's no longer Bally Sports Midwest. That's important for this little story. The Blues tweeted out a picture of one of those like big Pelican cases that you put all the put equipment in. That's how you transport equipment. And on it, on the top, it says St. Louis Blues. On the bottom, it says Leave in Ottawa. And then in the middle of it, it's got the big FanDuel Sports Network logo. So you can see this for yourself if you follow the Blues on Twitter. This is what the Blues tweeted. So this is kind of a behind-the-scenes story connected to the Blues getting this current game on TV right now. The Blues said, "This trunk carries gear that FanDuel Sports Network needs to put a Blues game on the air, and it's been on quite the journey this week. When landing in a road city, the trunk gets unloaded from the plane cargo area and it's brought to the rink with the player's gear, where it's picked up by the TV crew. In Montreal, though, the trunk was missing." Dun, dun, dun. "Fortunately, an AirTag inside the trunk revealed that the trunk was sitting at Videotron Center, a hockey arena 3 hours away in Quebec City." How in the world did it end up there? Kyle Sixta, sports producer extraordinaire in studio. Kyle, did you see this? Do you have any idea what I'm talking about here?
I didn't see this, no.
Okay, so do you have any guesses on how the Blues equipment thing could end up 3 hours away in Quebec City as opposed to being in Montreal where it was supposed to be?
I don't. I assume some type of travel air got put on the wrong bus or something, but...
Okay, here we go. So this is this is interesting. I continue on. Well, as it turns out, rock band Evanescence... The look on Kyle's face just now as I said that. Are you an Evanescence fan?
No, I mean, I know who they are, but...
They had that one, so was it Bring Me
to
Life?
Yeah.
Yeah, that song's a banger.
Yeah, no, it's a good song. Good song, for sure.
I don't know if I know another Evanescence song.
I don't think I do.
That's a good song. All right, anyways. Well, as it turns out, rock band Evanescence played a concert at Bell Center in Montreal the night before the Blues game, and their crew accidentally grabbed it when they packed up after the show. Evanescence's tour went to Quebec City and then to Ottawa, where the Blues were headed next. So the band took the Blues thing from Montreal to Quebec City, and then they went to Ottawa, where they were going to play their next show, and that's where the Blues are playing right now, and that's how the Blues and FanDuel Sports Network got this back, because Evanescence brought it with them.
Well, I would have just never guessed that in a million years.
That's a good story right there.
That is.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess they got on the air in Montreal, right? So they said in Montreal the trunk was missing. It got to Montreal, but somehow it didn't stay in Montreal, and it went to, again, Quebec City. So I don't know if that impacted it. I'm sure the good folks who get the Montreal Canadiens on TV could have helped out the thing. It's crazy the things that happen sometimes with equipment. And I can remember just various times traveling with teams and equipment not making it places, or you know, you're flying commercial and you get there. The thing with flying commercial is a lot of times if a plane is overweight, the first thing they do is they start to take the heaviest stuff off the plane, and a lot of times that's equipment. When I was broadcasting AAA baseball, everywhere we would travel commercial, which, like, that sounds good. As somebody who spent time working in minor league baseball, both riding buses and taking commercial flights, in many ways, riding buses was better because a game would get over and you would get on the bus and you would just get to your next place. Where when you're flying commercial, that, like when I was in the Pacific Coast League, the rule was that you had to take first flight out. So, for example, I was in Colorado Springs and we would fly out of Denver. So the way it would work out is that's about an hour and a half away from Colorado Springs. A game would end, you know, 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, and the bus to get to the airport, because generally you're on a 6 a.m. flight, would be at like 2 in the morning, and then you'd be playing that night. So just the whole flying commercial thing was always challenging, but I can't tell you, it was a fairly common thing, fairly common in the sense that it would happen, you know, once every couple years or so. Games would be postponed because equipment wouldn't make it. You've got this big bus full of baseball equipment that you're putting onto a commercial flight with bats and other kinds of stuff, and then it's a full flight, and all of a sudden they weigh the plane, and the plane comes in overweight. The first thing they take off is all the baseball equipment, and if you happen to be going into a city where there's not a lot of flights, or if there's bad weather and a lot of stuff is being delayed, all of a sudden you would be in a city, the team would be in the city, but none of the equipment would be in the city, and a game would end up getting postponed. So that is the life of carrying around equipment in the world of sports, and the Blues today kind of showing the weird stuff that can end up happening as the band Evanescence stole for a short amount of time their equipment to get the game fully on TV. Does not explain fully what they did in that game, but I'm sure they just borrowed stuff from Montreal. 3-0 is the score, by the way, as mentioned. Ottawa is up on the Blues. This first period is going to come to an end. I got to think this is not going to be a very happy locker room. The fact that Drew Bannister took that timeout, again, I'm hosting a show here, so I'm not completely locked in on what's going on, but I'm pretty sure I saw earlier that the team was brought over and Bannister was covering his face as he was speaking with some passion. So he is not happy with the way this team has started. Is that okay? You got to be kidding me. Freddie Freeman, we're going from hockey to baseball. Are you kidding me? First inning, Dodgers-Yankees, World Series, game number 4. I looked up to that. We got two TVs in the studio. I'm looking at the Blues game, and I look over, and I see Freddie Freeman circling the bases. And I guess I didn't totally realize what time it was that the game had actually started. And I just assumed that it was video, a replay of one of his previous, like the first inning home run that he hit yesterday. No. Freddie Freeman just hit a 2-0 or 2-run home run in the first. It was in the first inning yesterday, right?
It was.
Okay. So Freddie Freeman, for the second consecutive game in the World Series, hits a 2-run home run in the first inning, and the Dodgers are up by a 2-0 score. And if they win tonight, oh, he got all that one. If they win tonight, the World Series and the baseball season is over. I've got kind of mixed emotions on this. I want the World Series to go as deep as possible because I don't want the baseball season to end and I want to see a really good series. At the same time, I want the World Series to be over because once the World Series is over, then we officially get to the offseason and we can really start talking about the interesting things for the Cardinals, and we'll start hearing more rumors and all that sort of stuff, which will be a lot of fun. All right, we will switch gears. We'll talk some college football. It was not a great weekend for Missouri or Illinois. Some interesting things going on from a national top 25 perspective. We'll get into all that coming up in just a moment as we roll on with the Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly, taking you until 8 o'clock this evening. This past weekend, from a college football standpoint locally, not great. Missouri got trounced at Alabama. Illinois matched up against the number one team in the nation, Oregon. They lose by a wide margin as well. We're very happy to talk about that. And much, much more college football with the publisher of collegefootballnews.com. He is Pete Futak. You follow him on Twitter at Pete Futak. That's spelled F-I-U-T-A-K. He joins us right now. Pete, thanks for taking some time with us today. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Let me have a quick question for you. What percentage do you think in your world around there, and I'm from Chicago, so I'm very familiar with St. Louis, would it be Illinois and would be Missouri? Like, what, where are the fan bases and allegiances lie in the St. Louis world that you run?
Yeah, if we do a, like 100%, if we're only counting people who are either Missouri or Illinois, I would say maybe 60-40 Missouri, maybe 65-35 Missouri, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, it makes sense, because then you go to the other side of the state, obviously, once you get into, you know, the Kansas and Kansas State side of things. And, it's interesting to see how this is playing out, especially this year, you know, where you do have an Illinois team that's pretty good. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, you know, they obviously they're just waiting for basketball season in a lot of ways, but they have a team that, you know, right now it's still, even after the loss to Oregon, still in the thick of, you know, some pretty big things. And if they keep winning, all of a sudden, you know, this could be a pretty strong team under Brett Bielema, even though it's kind of nothing like it was when he first took over.
Yeah, and one other note on that, which I've been thinking about lately, because my boss, Tom Ackerman, who's the sports director here at KMOX, he is an Indiana grad, and I am a Kansas State grad, and it feels like locally there is more acceptance of him and Indiana and kind of openly talking about them, a team that's out to the east, as opposed to me talking about Kansas State, a team out to the west. I don't know what it is, but it feels like people in St. Louis are maybe more accepting of teams further east than further west.
Well, they're also very accepting of teams that haven't beaten a team that will be a sure thing to go to a bowl game other than Nebraska. But okay, look, it's Indiana. You know, so like, dude, we can, you know, nickel and dime this all you want. You know, Indiana, even the years when they've had easy schedules, don't go, you know, 8-0. They don't be, but, and they're doing what you do. No, they have not played a tough schedule. They have not played anybody who's all that great. Actually, Michigan State might be their toughest game on the schedule so far. But then, okay, fine. If you're playing a mediocre schedule, what do against those teams? You drill them, and that's what they're doing. So it's not like they're just getting by. You know, that I think last week's game was particularly telling because you didn't have Curtis Rourke, who a phenomenal get for the program, and they still won with ease. So, okay, you're not playing the greatest of schedules. We'll go out there and drill everyone by 18 points or so, and that seems to be what they're doing.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting when we get to college football playoff time, looking at that back end of the playoff, because there's undefeated teams like Indiana and Pitt. There's one loss teams, I think, like a Kansas State, like a Clemson, that are kind of all mixed in there together. And I think it's going to be really tough for the committee to make the decision. And some of those teams are going to lose and stuff's going to get figured out. But as it sits right now, I still think it's hard to kind of muddle through who's in that top group and who's not.
I'll start with this. Yeah, don't even go up to the bouncer and ask if you can get in if you don't have 10 wins. You know, unless it's something really crazy, you need not apply if you're not at least 10-2. And even that probably doesn't get it done in this kind of crazy year. Because you're right, things are going to start happening. Eventually, Miami's going to get exposed and they're going to lose a game or two. Indiana, if, you know, look, they might be, you know, if they beat Michigan, all of a sudden, you know, it's almost even a better thing for them if they somehow go 11-1 and don't quite get into the Big Ten championship because of tiebreakers and various other things. But yeah, I mean, really just keep on winning and hope for the best, because this year, of all crazy years, you know, everyone's, you know, we still have to wait to see, okay, BYU's been great. They had the really strange win over Kansas State. But Kansas State's really good. Kansas State's still probably the best team even with that loss. And Iowa State, let's see, they got some nasty games coming. So it is going to be an interesting sprint over this final 4 weeks.
A lot of the narrative here in St. Louis has been kind of comparing Missouri and Illinois, and Mizzou came into the season with very high expectations, and their two losses have been very, very one-sided, and their wins are not overly impressive. Whereas Illinois, their two losses have come to teams that are in all likelihood headed to the college football playoff. I think Illinois fans have a lot more reasons to be excited than Mizzou fans right now, but some of that obviously has to do with the expectations going into the season were so much higher for the Tigers.
Oh, sure. And that, but you know what? It was a little bit of a mirage as well. I mean, think about last year with Mizzou, and I have family who live in Columbia, and they yell at me for this, but who'd you beat? You know, I mean, okay, yeah, Ohio State in the bowl game, but that wasn't the bowl game, and you know, they still couldn't get it going against that team with the defense was in place for the Buckeyes, and they were down to, you know, inexcusable. You're Ohio State, you're still on scholarship, but still, they were down to what, a third string ish quarterback who just wasn't prepared, but still, fine, whatever. But they had the two big tests, and they lost. They failed against Jaden Daniels, and they failed against Georgia, and that was it. All the other games were kind of okay. And then this year, the team just, this is kind of what they are. They're very good. And it was always kind of the knock on Missouri for years is they always had those, you know, the tale of two seasons kind of schedule where they would get off to the big start against and beat all the teams they were supposed to beat. And then came the games against the teams that were pretty good and everything flipped. Well, they started beating some of those, you know, okay teams. Florida's down and some of the other teams that, you know, normally were powerhouses were a little bit down. But look, you are what your record says you are, and Mizzou's been, you know, kind of able to rise up under Eli Drinkwitz, and so it's been a really good run. But you know, you have a couple guys hurt that you weren't able to play do too much last week, but it's still a very good team, but certainly not, you know, just on the cusp of the college football playoff world.
This isn't a big problem, but it is somewhat of a problem. The sheer size of the SEC now, with all the schools that they've added, there are now scenarios where teams play conference schedules where you play some good teams but not great teams, and you can, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, you can't go have a one-loss or two-loss season in the SEC and not really play anybody. Now, if luck kind of goes your way or goes against you, however you want to view it, you can go through a conference schedule in the SEC and not really, really get tested.
Saw this one coming from 10 miles away, Texas A&M, because look at what the Aggies had. You don't play Alabama. You don't play Georgia. You don't play Tennessee. I think they missed Ole Miss as well. And what do you got? You had two big games that are at home. You had LSU, which they just played at home, and you get Texas in the renewal of the rivalry game, and that's at the end of the regular season, and that's at home. So now, and this is part of the problem, this is the argument with against the College Football Playoff Committee and how they're going to do things. I worked with them. I know the playoff committee people. I know how they roll. And at the end of the day, what they want more than anything else is just to be like, what can we justify? That's fair. You know, they're going to be like, what can we say? Hey, this team deserves a shot over this other team, as opposed to really diving too deep into it. So, look, if you're Texas A&M and you happen to be 10-2 or maybe 11-1, but you didn't play all the tough teams, well, all right, you're still going to be in over a team like, say, you know, Florida's probably an extreme example. But you look at Florida's schedule, it's like, yeesh, they get everybody. So you're right. Look at Indiana again. If Indiana had started a season playing, you know, Ohio State, Penn State, and Oregon, we'd be talking a little different animal here with the Hoosiers right now. But, hey, you play who's on your schedule and you go from there.
We're talking with Pete Futak. He is the publisher at collegefootballnews.com. If money was not a part of it, and that's obviously a big if, but if money was not a part of it, would the Mizzou's and the Texases and the Oklahomas actually be in a better place in their former home because they would have a better shot of getting into the college football playoff as opposed to being judged against other top-tier teams in their conference?
That is absolutely the argument, because you're right. They're going to make a gajillion dollars more being in the SEC than they would have made in a Big 12, whatever thing's happening there. But the flip side of that is BYU and Iowa State might both be in the college football playoff.
Yeah.
And as crazy as this is, at this point, look, Alabama, they lose again, they're out. They're not going to put in a 9-3 Alabama, even though they love Alabama, the college football playoff world. And that's kind of the problem now is that, you know, like you just mentioned, there's the downside to having these larger conferences where, you know, you're right. There's a lot of teams that are going to be, you know, in the mix now because your schedule kind of worked out right. You know, look at the Miami slate. They didn't really do much anything against anybody great so far, but hey, their schedule is going to be working out fine, and they have the record to prove it. And like you said, those schools that did flip and did move, well, now it's Oklahoma might not even go bowling. I mean, look at the rest of their schedule. You know, Oklahoma might not go to a bowl game. Florida State's already out of a bowl game. And so there's all these teams with big names that probably aren't going to get a 13th game just because their schedule just got tougher.
Mizzou had the stupid game against UMass a couple weeks ago, and a road game at UMass for an SEC team just should not happen. Are they going to make the decision in this league to go ahead and add another league game like they should?
I don't know. Yeah, here's the problem with that, and this goes back to different. Remember 2020, where you had the all-SEC versus SEC schedule, and what did we see? Even with the bowl game, after the bowl game, it was something crazy. Like, out of the 14 teams at the time, or 16 teams, whatever it was, only like five of them ended up with a winning record. You know, because Alabama, Texas A&M just ripped through everybody. And then all these teams had, you know, 5-7-ish, you know, 4-8-ish records. And that's kind of the problem where, all right, well, just let's say on the wrong day you lose to a Vanderbilt and you have a seventh conference game schedule. Well, it looks a lot better on your resume if you are 9-3 rather than 8-4. And so it's not fun for the South Carolinas, you know, and Kentuckys of the world to have to, you know, go 5-7 every year. Maybe, you know, you'll have the right year where, like we keep talking about, that the schedule just works out right. But for the most part, you know, you're pretty much not going to see those mid-level teams realistically be in the hunt for anything big again. So the reason why you don't have that extra conference game is your conference is hard enough. I always got my attitude towards this is as long as you have one strong non-conference game, you're okay. And for most of these SEC teams, they've got an ACC rival, whether it's Florida playing Florida State, Georgia playing Georgia Tech, Kentucky playing Louisville, and so on.
We're talking with Pete Futag, just specifically about Illinois before we get you out of here. They're a two-loss team right now. They're two losses. We'll see if Penn State gets into the college football playoff, or obviously Oregon is en route to that. Four games left, Minnesota, Michigan State, Rutgers, Northwestern. Going to Rutgers is probably the toughest one left there. But what does it look like for Illinois if they find a way to finish out the regular season at 10-2?
Oh, first of all, get past Minnesota. I mean, that is a dangerous game for them just to get by. I think Minnesota's actually favored in this because they're playing well. I think Illinois wins, but that's a toss-up. So get through that. But like you said, that's not crazy. You know, if you look at that schedule, if they get out of this week alive, you know, Rutgers isn't that great. They can certainly be Michigan State, Northwestern. Eh. So, yeah, you're right. 10-2. You know, the problem with this is where's their big giant win? Because the College Football Playoff Committee is going to love any team that has a huge win on schedule. They don't really the problem, at least traditionally, with the College Football Playoff Committee is that they do not credit the good loss against a great team. Mm-hmm. They like big giant wins. And Illinois has, you know, Michigan, okay, but Michigan might finish like 6-6. You know, so there's nothing really there. But certainly, if you go 10-2, again, 10-2 gets you in the discussion. If you're Illinois and you go 10-2, you're at least in the picture for that 11th or 12th spot.
You're right. I didn't realize that Minnesota opened as a 1.5 favorite. That's now up to 3. So money's coming in on Minnesota right now.
Exactly. I do think Illinois pulls this off. I think it's a little bit of a Minnesota mirage. But in that game, by the way, whoever, it's all turnover margin. It's just both those teams cannot handle turnover, so whoever turns the ball over wins that game.
Pete Futak is the publisher at collegefootballnews.com. That's collegefootballnews.com. Pete, I really enjoyed this conversation. Hopefully we can do it again in the future.
Absolutely, anytime. You have a great night.
Awesome, very good. That's Pete Futak joining us on the program. Follow him on Twitter at Pete, FIUTAK, and check out collegefootballnews.com. We'll take a break, have more in just a moment. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Back at it, it's the Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. I meant to talk about this on yesterday's show. Sometimes 2 hours is just not enough for everything that I want to talk about. And we ended up having a really good Cardinals conversation during the 7 o'clock hour yesterday, just talking about expectations for the team this year and if the win-loss record is somewhat similar this upcoming season as it was this past season. But it's under the pretense that this upcoming year is more of a rebuild year, where last year the pretense was that this was a team that was trying to be competitive. Would you feel different about it? So you can always go back and listen. I enjoyed the conversation yesterday. Got a good number of calls on it. You can check out the KMOX Sports Open Line podcast, KMOX.com, and also on the Odyssey app. So I meant to talk about this yesterday. I know they talked about it a little bit during the Chris and Amy show because of Chris Ranji's his fandom for the Chicago Bears. It is remarkable sometimes the things that you see happen in sports. And Sunday was one of those things you just sort of had to laugh. The Chicago Bears were leading the Washington Commanders 15-12 with time starting to tick down, and this ended up happening.
Four of them at the goal line. They bring three. Daniels backing up. He's just going to have to let one fly. Goes to the right side. Steps away from the defenders. Gives himself some time. Now steps up, fires. Heads towards the end zone. It is
Can you imagine, like, driving in your car and hearing that and going, what happened? What happened? You couldn't understand. But it's great. Like, I'm not being critical of their call. That was amazing. Let me translate what happened. Noah Brown caught a 52-yard pass from Jaden Daniels on a Hail Mary, a ball that was tipped into his hands. And that call was from the Washington Commanders radio network. And just pandemonium on that broadcast, as you couldn't understand anything that happened, but eventually you knew, and that was fun. Just for the fun of it, just in case Chris Ranji happens to be listening right now, let's listen on how it sounded on Chicago Bears radio.
To the left, McLaren, and that's where Jaden Daniels is eyeballing. Jaden Daniels sifting back, being pressured. Jaden Daniels hemmed into the pocket, looking for blockers, looking for something. He's got plenty of time, launches, deep pass into the area of the end zone. And it's caught by Noah Brown. He was the tip man, and this place is now gone into bedlam mode. Washington with the miracle finish. The breakup pass into the waiting arms of Noah Brown. Nobody back there. Crushing loss. 18-15 Washington. Hail Mary. 2 seconds left.
People in Chicago had a much better idea of what happened. And ironically enough, people in Chicago probably would have just rather not known what happened there in that game. Again, that call from the Chicago Bears radio network. Just a remarkable moment. And that's why I love sports, because if you're a Washington Commanders fan, like, that moment is so amazing, and you remember that game forever and ever and ever. Unfortunately, on the other side, if you're a Bears fan, you remember that. But that's pretty standard. That's par for the course. If you're a Bears fan, you've been through some version of that many times. Here's the other side of this story, and this is where there is a lesson to be learned. So Bears cornerback Tyrique Stevenson, as that play was starting to develop, he was way back on the left side. So if you're looking at things from a defensive perspective, so you're looking towards the quarterback, you can see the quarterback's eyes essentially. He's playing very deep out to the left. And this man thinks that the Bears they've got themselves a road victory. And there's very few things in sports better than a really good road win. And Stevenson back turn to the play, basically. He's looking towards the left sideline. He's motioning to the crowd. He's giving them the business. He's yucking it up. And then the play starts to develop, and he's like, okay, well, I should probably get involved in this. And what does he do? He runs over and gets in the play, and he kind of tips the ball. He was a big part of why that ended up happening. So he's not paying attention to the play. He is yucking it up at fans. Last second, he gets involved. He goes over. He tries to make a play, and he ends up tipping it, and it turns into a touchdown. Now, to his credit, he apologized. We live in a very forgiving world. If you apologize, more often than not, people will forgive you. When he spoke with the assembled media, he said that, quote, I let the moment get too big, and it's something that can never happen again and won't ever happen again. Media reports, and this is where I really appreciate Mr. Stevenson, he addressed the entire team without prompting during a meeting on Monday, saying he wanted to let other players know that he let them down, The Bears said that any type of discipline that was going on was going to be handled in-house. That's a bad film review one way or another. Like, that's something that lives forever. And, something that I always say is I don't want to be judged by my worst moment. And that's a worst moment type situation for Stevenson. But what a turn of events. Everything that happened in that moment in a very short amount of time, from the 25 seconds that was left on the clock when the Chicago Bears took their 15-12 lead, to everything that happened between then, the 25 seconds worth of game time, the Bears getting the ball and eventually putting together that Hail Mary pass for a win. That was a remarkable thing that happened in that Commanders-Bears game. In case you're not paying attention, I know we have some folks who listen to this show who just do not like the NFL. Commanders are having a good season. They are a team that there were not high expectations for when the season got started. They are now sitting at 6-2. And even the Bears are having a surprisingly respectable season, because the Bears are very good at being terrible. When you look at all the teams in the NFL that are really good at being terrible, you think about the Raiders, you think about the Jaguars, you think about the Bears. They're very good at being terrible. They're not terrible. They're 4-3. But that was a terrible moment for them. All right, one more break, and when we come back, we are going to wrap up this edition of the program, get you updated on what's happening with the Blues, get you updated what's going on with the World Series, and also talk a little more about the World Series TV ratings, which are really good, and that's a bummer for baseball that this series looks to be likely over tonight, but we'll do that coming up in just a moment as we wrap things up here on the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Starting to wrap things up here on the Graybar Sports Open Line. Wanted to mention a couple things before we get out of here. First off, again, starting on Monday, 12 noon, every day, Monday through Friday, so 5 days a week, we are going to have that video stream, some combination of myself, Kevin Wheeler, Tom Ackerman, and Bernie Miklas. You'll be able to watch that live at 12 noon every day on the KMOX Sports social media channels, or just go back and watch it on demand or listen to it via podcast form later on, but that is going to be starting coming up on Monday. We've been doing it on Mondays, but we're going to move that to an everyday thing. I think Monday is going to stick with us doing all four of us on the show, and then Tuesday through Friday, it'll be some combination of two or three of us, but we're going to keep the four-person roundtable structure for that every Monday. Also, we've talked a lot about the TV ratings for this World Series, and the Dodgers right now lead the Yankees 2-1 in Game 4 of the World Series. Dodgers trying to clinch and finish off a sweep. Yankees trying to extend it to a game number 5. The World Series ratings have been fantastic. Up 60% year over year. In younger demographics, the ratings are up like 90%. So young people are watching the World Series this year, and if there's any problem that baseball can have, it's attracting younger viewers and younger fans. So that's a really good thing. And then obviously with Ohtani and Yamamoto, there is a lot of interest in this World Series in Japan. And through the first couple games of the World Series, it was averaging over $15 million in Japan alone, as the numbers, the ratings for Japan are incredible. So hopefully the Yankees can win tonight and we can just keep this baseball season going on a little bit further. Something that's going to be going on after I get done, it is At Your Service. Dave Simons is in the house. He joins us right now. Dave, good to see you. How are you?
Well, I'm well, Matt. Flew back home, actually, this morning. From the Southeast, where I ran into, and I'm going to share some of these personal stories, a lot of people talking politics, whether I wanted to hear their opinion or not. So that's the environment in which we reside these days.
We're 1 week away.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Everything that has led up to this for the last 4 years, minus basically 4 days, since 3 days after the election. I mean, talk about a ramp up to this election. It has not stopped since the moment Joe Biden officially became president.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah. And how many people think it's going to stop the very next day?
I don't. That's why. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be a couple days, you would think.
You at least. Yeah. At least. And so, Matt, that's one of the main themes that we'll be talking about tonight. The most common question I get is, whoever wins, what is it going to do to my 401k? Mm-hmm. I mean, is this going to be something that I need to be worried about? And we'll talk about that. Plus a special guest that I have who is on the front line on Wall Street, who's going to be calling in a little after 8:30, and we'll get his idea of what Wall Street is kind of whispering right now.
I think a lot, and again, this is a sports show, I'll keep it at that, but I do think the general feeling from a lot of people out there is, as they see less and less money left over from their paycheck every 2 weeks, is which one of these individuals is going to create programs where there's more money left over at the end.
I think that's key. And so you're looking at that, plus immigration seem to be the two hot topics right now, and which candidate will do better despite personality issues, which we won't get into, but that also plays into this as well.
So for those undecided voters out there, listen with a very discerning ear tonight as Dave talks to that and much, much more over the next couple hours. Good to see you. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it.
That's Dave Simons again. Tomorrow we'll be back with you from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock here on the show. I do want to say thank you to Elizabeth Meineke for joining us on the program. She was in studio talking through the most recent issue of Cardinals Magazine. Also talked college football with Pete Futak. Appreciate him taking some time with us as well. Have a wonderful evening at your service with Dave Simons. It is on the way next. This has been a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.